Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happened?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, we're watching cartoons today.
Yeah, that's the thing that you don't want to watch in an area of your home where your working at home wife is, especially. You want to keep the cartoons in the office.
It really makes... It makes watching an episode of Star Trek at like 10:30 a.m. seem positively professional as an enterprise.
Live action seems like it's plausibly work-related. Cartoons? No way. Especially yeah. if it's Futurama. Like Futurama is a very, like it's a familiar looking yeah. cartoon to most people.
I was self-conscious about the fact that I was laughing a lot watching this, and yeah. I was like, I feel like I'm rubbing salt in a wound that is very legitimate.
Generous laugher Benjamin R. Harrison, just giving it right back to the creators of Futurama. Doesn't yeah. surprise me. This is a funny show.
Well, a lot of people don't know that I have a microphone in my house that Matt Groening can hear, so if I laugh at a Simpson or a Futurama... He'll know.
That sick fuck has a microphone in the toilet paper tube. What the hell?
Yeah. What's your history with Futurama?
Compulsively watched it when it was out, and then compulsively watched it again when it was on DVD. Like, I was a big fan. The show's great.
I too am a big fan. I really love... I feel like it would not be... a total exaggeration to say that there's some inspiration for what we do in Futurama. It's that, like, I'd say that 90% of the jokes are just jokes that anybody watching can get, but that 10% that are like, you have to know about this sci-fi thing that we're talking about to see what the joke is.
Right.
I know what all of the things are in Futurama, and I really like laughing at those, like, slightly wink-wink, nudge-nudge sci-fi jokes.
It's a great show. I'm glad I got to go back and start watching it again. I'm hoping it didn't start something with me that now I feel compelled to finish.
Yeah. I've never owned the DVDs of it, but in the streaming era have like embarked on, I'm going to watch all episodes of Futurama projects more than once where I was, you know, mid season three when the contract expired on the streaming service and all the Futurama episodes went away. I've been foiled a couple of times. I feel like I've seen the pilot like 300 times.
It seems harder and harder to find the comfort food binge stream of a 20-minute program of any kind.
Yeah.
Like, it's so easily digestible. It goes so fast. And then you're hungry again, right? Right when it's over.
It's like eating Jello, you know? Yeah. You're just shoveling that stuff in our maws.
I know. It's the way people describe Greatest Gen and Greatest Discovery. Like, once it's over, it feels like nothing happened.
Boy, that was just some
empty calories. I'll never get that time back, I suppose.
Now, finally, to listen to something of substance.
Adam, who was that? That did that P1 that kind of bribed us into doing this episode.
Oh shit! I should look that up. Yeah, we're here in week two of the Max Fun Drive to do something we said we would never do. And I'm not talking about making an episode about Futurama. I'm talking about taking a viewer's recommendation for action.
Yeah, Defested is the name.
That's right.
Given. Defested also helpfully gave pronunciation guides for your name and mine in the P1.
I appreciate that, Defested.
Yeah. Ben rhymes with den, and Adam rhymes with datum.
It's true. Both of those things are true. And it's also true that Defested paid $100 to mm-hmm. purchase a personal Priority One message in order to make sure that their request was seen. Yeah. No guarantee of us taking it for action, but look at us.
Oh, I think we can guarantee that. I think that if you get a Priority One message and ask us to do something, we promise to do it.
Priority One messages, verily the truth or dare of of Uxbridge Shimoda, and here we are. I look away for a moment, and Ben's doing something humiliating because Defested said so.
Yeah, exactly. You've already heard a pledge break, and you'll hear a couple more before the show is over. But if you're listening to this post Max Fun Drive, know that this was a Max Fun Drive episode, and we did an extra one this month because of the Max Fun Drive, and partly as a thank you to all the people who support the show at MaximumFun.org/join. It really means a ton to us that people come out and support the show in the way that they do. So thanks to everyone who has already gone and done it. Adam, what do you say we get into Futurama Season 4, Episode 12? 11?
Oh, jeez. Don't do this.
It's kind of listed as one or the other. Anyway, the name of the episode is Where No Fan Has Gone Before.
I did a bit of reading about the production of this episode, and I don't usually do that. The reason I did was because it seemed like such a unique challenge to gather the original series cast for a project like this, like far more challenging, I would think, yeah, than the TNG cast members doing Family Guy, you know?
I really wanted to know if they did it in person, because I know that The Simpsons, they try and do those table, like when they record The Simpsons, they do it with the whole cast there in the room together, right?
That was not the case for this episode, save for Bill Shatner and Leonard Nimoy. They recorded their lines together, but everyone else recorded separately.
Wow. Amazing.
It all began.
Quiet, you!
I mean, they didn't get the entire cast. DeForest Kelly definitely is walking around. Like, I don't know why they made the Scotty joke, but not the Bones joke.
Well, I can tell you, Ben, it's because DeForest Kelly was dead at the time of this show's production. Uh-huh. And when...
But his head hadn't been preserved in a tank?
No. And they tried to get Jimmy Doohan, and they actually submitted an offer, and Jimmy Doohan's agent replied, "No way." So, like, the only holdout was James Doohan, and
they gave him the business a little bit in this episode. I think
you deserve the business. If you're the lone holdout, give me a break.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that does seem a little less than fun, Jimmy D.
I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, you're not obligated to be the thing that you're known for forever and ever. Amen. But
yeah,
like at this moment in time, how many more opportunities to get the band back together could there be? And for as much as that has been made public about the many, you know, internal arguments among the original series cast, that especially might be a reason to play one more song with these guys in a Futurama episode.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I kind of also think about it from the perspective of being like a essentially retired person in the entertainment business and being like, hey, there's some upstart cartoon show that wants to, you know, waste a bunch of your time, and being like, I don't know what that is, like, it's fine if other people want to do it. I don't want to do it.
You know what? That's super true. Like, he's an old man and retired.
Look at him. He's so old.
Leave him alone. Yeah.
It would have been really great to get them back together for this. And what we do get is a ton of fun. We open on a very Star Trek reminiscent shot of the Planet Express delivery ship coming out of space, and it's got nacelles on it. It's got the TOS nacelles like bolted to the sides of the ship. How did this happen, Adam?
You know what? You would expect this entire show to be inspired by Star Trek, but Matt Groening said that he had never seen an episode of the original series in its entirety.
Wow.
And of the movies, he'd only seen the motion picture. It seems impossible that you could be a creator of a series like Futurama and not have familiarized yourself with that. But I mean, that's a big bit of business to consume. And I wonder to what extent, like, the way many comic writers and stand-up comics themselves don't consume other comedy for fear of, you know, accidentally taking or using poorly that inspirational material. I wonder if that's part of it.
Well, clearly someone in the writer's room was extremely fluent in Star Trek, the original series, if Matt Groening wasn't. This episode opens with the heads of the cast of the original series, and it is the cast. It's not, it's not Bones and Spock. It's DeForest Kelly and Leonard Nimoy and the gang, and their heads are in tanks. This is a technology that Futurama uses all the time to have the voice of a character familiar to our time be present in a future 1,000 years from now. And they're in a courtroom that is being presided over by Zap Brannigan, who is a character that seems very much based on Captain Kirk
right. In
a lot of ways. Zap has boarded the Planet Express ship to preside over court, and Bender and Leela are also there, and they call their first witness and wheel him in, and it's Fry, Philip J. Fry, and he's piking it. He's in the Pike wheelchair.
He's got like the lazy eyes. He's got the open mouth. He's using the beeps.
One beep for yes, two for no.
Double yes. Guilty.
But then they ask him to explain how it is he got to be so guilty, and he starts doing like Morse code beeps. They come back to this a couple of times, that people are Morse code beeping their way through detailed recollections of how we came to be here.
I love how the show starts with William Shatner's voice. Like, it really... Mm-hmm. It really begins with that tone setter, and it's almost unbelievable to see the show open, fall into the episode start, and hear that voice.
And his voice sounds great, too. He doesn't sound like old and over it in the way that Shatner can occasionally sound.
Right, and everyone who they got to be in the episode sounds that enthusiastic, sounds irrepressibly game for it.
Yeah. Like, who knows what the interpersonal dynamics at play were when they were recording it, but like, what got to the episode is fun and good because they're playing their characters, you know?
Even the great Jonathan Frakes has exactly one line of dialogue in this episode, and it's...
It's a really funny line.
And he has a great moment.
Come on!
Oh! Yes! Front row.
And it just makes you think... That he just must be the greatest person to hang out with, even if you have a short amount of time. Like, the amount of time it takes to fly from Las Vegas to Los Angeles, like, even if that's all the time you have, I imagine the stories you would hear, the friendship that would get galvanized.
The lasting friendship that you would create in that moment. Yeah. I kind of looked at that head in the tank next to his, and I was like, I wonder what that head is thinking. How nervous that head must be. How, like, scrutinized that head must feel. Like, does Frakes know that I know that he's Frakes? Does Frakes recognize who I am?
In the fictional future of Futurama, if your head was for some reason in the front row of this museum, which is ridiculous, and then Frakes slid forward to be next to yours, I think you'd throw your head jar off of the lip of the railing you'd smash yourself on the ground, wouldn't you?
I would rock back and forth until I tipped off the edge.
And then all of the heads would have to look at that slowly rotting wet head on the floor until the museum opens the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
Really traumatic what you would have put them through instead of just having a conversation.
Just, hey, really appreciate your work. All that head needed to say.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe do a little fun first class joke like, hey, can I buy you a drink?
Oh,
these are free.
The story Fry tells starts out in a video rental store, which is something I look forward to coming back in the year 3000. They're looking through the tapes of different movies, and you know, it's the whole Planet Express gang trying to argue over what to rent. And Fry says a phrase that is forbidden.
What words? Star Trek?
Shut your gills.
Star Trek is phrase forbidden.
That is exactly what I wrote down.
Star Trek?
Star Trek is phrase forbidden.
Sir, I'm sorry, but your voice is carrying.
A security camera irises in on him. Yeah. Everyone hits the deck.
They have to hide Fry in the body of Bender, which is like, I love like the joke of Bender being like almost entirely hollow.
Yeah.
And how that is like used as like exclusively for joke utility. It's like there's been a million episodes where somebody climbing into Bender would have helped the plot.
Right.
And that's not the point.
This is not like the episode where for some reason Bender has a case of wine in there.
Right. Exactly. So they smuggle Fry out of the video store after he uttered this this totally forbidden phrase of Star Trek.
And this is a moment in the episode that sort of establishes the pattern of storytelling. We're going to jump back and forth between the court martial scene and the stories they tell there. And when we bounce back into the courtroom scene, Uhura tells the story of why the word Star Trek is banned. And we see via flashback that Star Trek has become a religion, which sounds great for us, Ben. If Star Trek were to become a religion, I think we'd become very powerful.
We would be like the cardinals of Star Trek religion, or the bishops or something.
Yeah, because what you want to be right now is the higher up of any religion. Nothing but great reputations when you go further and further upward in the ladder of organized religions.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't think Ben and Adam could get worse press, but here they go.
Right. And this is actually something that the episode locks in on, which is as the religion becomes too powerful and even all powerful, it becomes too powerful to exist.
Yeah. They immolate the bodies of all Star Trek fans everywhere by literally throwing them into a volcano. And they forbid people from practicing this religion, and then they load like a rocket full of tapes and Star Trek books and crap and fire it at a planet called Omega 3. And
Omega 3 is world forbidden.
Sir, I'm sorry, but your voice is carrying.
There was a moment like in Greatest Gen where I think we were just talking about Dante's Peak a lot and the grandma scene where she walks next to the rowboat. And every time I see a death by volcano scene, I always think of Dante's Peak.
I was immediately thinking of Joe versus the volcano, and I was like, they're going to pop right out of that volcano and wind up in the South Pacific with some really expensive luggage.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how fast do you die if you're thrown into lava?
Oh, I bet pretty fast.
I mean, sometimes you see you see volcano lava and it's really thin. It looks like you die really fast in thin lava, but that thick stuff, like what if you were thrown into a thick volcano and like
you
kind of splatted into the top like it was pudding, like just really hot pudding.
Oh, it's like a non-Newtonian fluid like oobleck where if you hit it really fast, you bounce off of
it. I'm wondering if the impact kills you, not the heat.
Yeah.
At that point. Shit.
It might.
That's what I'm thinking happens. And that kind of makes it worse for me. Like I want to believe that if I were thrown into a volcano, I would, like, it would be Terminator 2, like, fast. Like, not Terminator 2 slow, like I'm on a chain slowly, like, raising a thumb to let people know I'm going to be okay and this is what I wanted. But, like, that was fast lava. That the Terminator was lowered into. That's why they had to use the chain. He would have gone too fast for the thumbs up.
Our buddy Manu could probably answer this question. He's a real volcano nerd.
That would take me having to start a conversation with Manu, and I just don't know if I'm there yet mentally. How about you ask him and then tell me what he says?
He was just over at my house last night, and my wife made me explain why our Baywatch podcast is called Santa Monica Mountains to Manu's 13-year-old son. And I was like, God, I'm such an idiot. Why do I do this to myself?
That episode you're talking about, Ben, the Santa Monica Mountains, available to supporters of The Greatest Discovery right now. You could pause this episode and go listen to over an hour of us talking about a Baywatch episode, if that's what you wanted to do with your day today.
If not right now, very, very soon, the Greatest Discovery bonus episode of Garbage Fire 2, Non-Fungible Tycoons.
If not now, soon. Basically my guiding principle.
Yeah, yeah.
Throughout my life.
A little joke is made about how sad it is that another science fiction show was canceled before its time. Of course, we know the history of Futurama getting canceled and recanceled over and over again and juggled around from network to cable and whatnot.
Fox really had this kind of track record for a time, you know?
Yeah.
They'd cancel a thing and then that thing becomes very popular after cancellation.
True. And Matt Groening never stopped having fun with that.
You think that's bad? Fry approaches Spock's head in a museum.
Yeah.
For counsel.
He wants to know what happened to Star Trek. There's a surveillance camera that seems very interested in seeing if Fry utters the forbidden phrase. And Nimoy is trying to play it coy. You know, he's not admitting to knowing anything. And also trying to downplay the extent to which Star Trek was a big part of his life, which, you know, that was a battle that Nimoy famously kind of had with himself publicly.
Right.
Publishing books by the name of I Am Not Spock.
In this conversation, Fry learns about the 79 episodes and 6 movies being shot into this planet, and it inspires an idea. The idea is that he will take Spock's head with him, hop into the Planet Express rocket, and head to this forbidden planet.
This scene really struck me because Nimoy breaks down crying about his fate and about the fate of Star Trek. And it's I associate him so strongly with Spock that like him bursting into tears, even in cartoon form, made me very uncomfortable.
Yeah. As most emotional outbursts are when experienced in person. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he also explains that he was left here by his fellow cast members who left for Planet Omega 3, and he had just signed a 6-month contract for an apartment, so he couldn't break the lease, and he let them go without him. He hasn't seen them in hundreds of years.
In this scene, I was surprised by just how much emotion was conveyed by a couple of actors in jars in a scene like this. Like,
yeah.
It seems like it would be more difficult to convey that as a voice actor in a cartoon than it would be in real life. And all of the actors who participated in this episode, I thought, in their own way, was able to do that. Whether or not they're trying to convey something comedic or serious mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. sad or whatever.
Yeah.
They're all really good at this.
Frakes, for example, when he celebrates getting to be on the front row of the shelf, like you can really feel the pathos in that performance.
You can really sense how excited he is to be next to someone who may be interested in a conversation. He's open that way.
I think he's next to Liz Taylor.
Yeah.
That'd be a huge upgrade from sitting next to a fucking Star Trek podcaster.
I don't know, man. I think there's something to learn from everyone.
They are really bizarre.
Aboard the Planet Express ship, as they approach forbidden territory, all the alarms go off.
Yeah.
They have every reason not to enter the orbit of this ship, but they just go ahead and crash right into it, like they're Captain Janeway or something.
It seems like some kind of planetary defense disabled all their systems. Maybe there was some kind of planetary defense buoy.
Right.
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy.
A warning buoy.
And they go down real hard.
They don't use their delivery ship as a way to circumvent a security system like this.
Yeah.
And I don't remember them doing that very much on this show. The way that like many apartment complexes, I think myself included, like a delivery person has the gate code. They can just go through and then put stuff on your on your doorstep or whatever. Like the Planet Express ship doesn't have a code to this planet. It's because Planet Forbidden.
Sir, I'm sorry, but your voice is carrying.
The Postmates delivery guy weirdly does not, and that's why there's constantly cold pizza out there.
I know.
Their ship is really like banged up, but they step out on this planet and a bunch of like pieces of the set of noteworthy TOS episodes, such as the Guardian of Forever hole and the Old West set and the whatever that gate is that the Nazis all hang out at in the Nazi episode. What gate is that?
Is that the Brandenburg Gate?
Brandenburg Gate. That sounds right.
I hope that's right.
Guess who should pop out of Carl's hole but Shatner, and he's embodied. He's not just a head in a tank. He's got a uniform.
Yeah. He looks great.
Looking svelte.
And he looks happy. They all are. As soon as they emerge from Carl's hole,
yeah,
they are psyched.
The last person to emerge is Welshy, who is kind of a rotund guy in a red shirt, clearly there to stand in for Scotty. And it's explained that there was a musical reunion special in the 2200s, and they could not persuade Jimmy Doohan to participate. And he was like bad at yodeling, right?
Yeah.
And so they replaced him with Welshy. Welshy says some stuff in Welsh to sell the joke that he's Welsh.
Aye, do we want him at one whirl?
Welshy is really the red middle finger to Jimmy Doohan at this really point. Is.
Welsh is a language. I feel like the Welsh kind of delight in how hard it is for non-Welsh speakers to understand.
Uh-huh.
Like, if I grew up in Wales, I would write longhand letters in Welsh to the BBC once a week just to fuck with them, you know?
Now that sounds like something you'd make the time for.
Yeah. That sounds like a great hang.
The cast is so happy to be fully corporeal that they didn't stop to ask why this had happened.
Yeah.
This is a very, Nexus ribbon way to be at this point. Things are going so well, none of them ever stopped to ask why things were going so well. And right. They soon find out when this glitter cloud appears. And this glitter cloud is so angry, it's angry enough to kill Welshy in front of them.
Yeah. This is Melvar, and Melvar has kind of fallen into the same religious fervor for Star Trek as the population of Earth once did. Melvar consumed all the tapes and books and stuff that were shot at his home planet, and as a being of pure energy was able to cause the heads of the cast to be re-embodied. And he just loves having the cast around. He worships it.
as a being of pure energy, you and I both know what's actually going on there with Melvar. I can't believe he's interested in playing with his toys here. Because when you're a being of pure energy,
yeah,
you never stop coming.
Yeah, you come 100% of the time. Yeah. It's actually really messy.
I'm everywhere and nowhere! I can see everything!
It's very hard to like get a dinner reservation when you're a being of pure energy. Not because they're being weird about you being a being of pure energy. They don't want to deal with all your nut.
I mean, doctors often have that story when asked, you know, what's like the weirdest thing that you've ever experienced as a doctor? Mm-hmm. You know, like what's the patient that stands out to you? And that's the dinner party answer many doctors have. It's the being of pure energy.
Yeah.
But the description of that.
By the time I came into the exam room, it was already ankle deep in nut.
But that story always pivots into something sad. You know, like the being of pure energy is tormented by this. This isn't a good thing. That's why Melvar is so upset here.
It's kind of a Ponzi scheme of good feelings, because the first thing Melvar does is give Spock a new body and then announces that there's going to be a Star Trek convention. And like Melvar really wants to do the Star Trek convention right, waiting in line and paying for autographs and stuff. And not somebody the cast is like super into.
It's a really fun variation of like the kid playing with the action figures to, you know, do an episode versus a kid playing with the action figures to do a convention. Yeah. I want to meet that kid.
Yeah. Yeah. And not even a good version of it. You know, like we're talking about a convention where Shatner does the real Slim Shady as a spoken word
right
on stage.
I mean, all of the quote unquote fun elements of an okay convention are seen here.
Yeah.
But when Melvar loses the trivia contest to Fry, he pivots the scene into what I believe he's always really wanted to do with these characters. He wants his fan fiction to become a reality. And when this is proposed, Leela uses this as an opportunity to leave. Like she knows that
they're not going to stick around and watch the fan production of
right.
TOS.
So they get the hell out of there. And I was surprised that they did. Like we cut to space and there's the Planet Express ship. They're getting away.
One thing that Futurama can get away with in a way that another television show might not be able to is that they just hatch a plan to murder Melvar here. Like, nobody asked them to murder Melvar. The case hasn't really been made that Melvar is, like, a threat to anyone or even doing something that, like the cast is, I guess, technically they're imprisoned by Melvar, but not in a way that they find unpleasurable. Like, they like having bodies and shit.
They kind of unsubtly make the case that creators of fan fiction are deserving of the death penalty.
it's a pretty dark moment.
Yeah
I mean, like, when we cut back and they're like reading through the script on the half of an Enterprise bridge set that Melvar has there, this is the first time that these characters are not giving it their all. And Melvar is none too pleased with the fact that that they're not like putting their stank on it.
It's interesting that that's how you described this, because what I saw in this scene was that Melvar can't write.
Melvar, you have to respect your actors.
The love of a thing doesn't translate into a person's ability to make that thing.
That's true. I mean, I guess we've seen plenty of Star Trek scripts that seem to have been written by somebody that can't write get produced by the actual show. So
that's true. Yeah.
Actors do need to be able to rise to the occasion from time to time.
That's fair.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
The Planet Express ship is on its way back, and they've come up with a plan to shoot some beam weapons into Melvar and pop him like a balloon. But unfortunately, what happens is that these beam weapons actually serve to power Melvar up and make him really big, big enough to reach a energy hand into space and grab the Planet Express ship and slam it onto the ground a second time.
I really love the energy hand effect, and I really love the effect of Melvar itself, because Melvar is a total TOS monster.
Yeah.
Like, I love that that Melvar is not a Futurama monster. Melvar right. is a Star Trek monster.
Totally. It's a very simple optical effect where they're yeah. putting some sparkly effect and some green tinting on the screen.
Which you could argue is a better effect than anything the original series ever made.
Yeah, you could argue that. I also love how beat-upable the Planet Express ship is in this show. Like, this is the second time we see it get totaled in this episode, and it was like ready to fly again with no explanation. Like, they just love like breaking shit on this show for a joke.
Science fiction damage is so interesting, right? And there seem to be very few forms of it. Like, there's scorch, and there's nacelle flying off, or there's big explosion, like Star right. Wars. But there are very few examples of, like, crumple
yeah.
damage. And Futurama has nailed the crumple
yeah.
in a really fun way.
Which definitely comes from The Simpsons, I think. Like, they definitely... Yeah. Like Homer's car always has mm-hmm. some body damage whenever you see it, and
yeah,
just meant to indicate something about like the way Homer conducts shit.
Crumple is funny.
Yeah, crumple is much funnier than huge explosion most yeah. of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, Praxis blowing up is the funniest thing that Star Trek ever did.
Oh, yeah. God, I could barely hold it together.
Yeah, I didn't even know what was happening by the time I recovered from laughing in that movie. I was like, what? They're in prison? Why? So this puts Melvar in a tough position. Melvar realizes that Fry, Leela, and Bender are real space heroes that did like a real version of what the original series cast has only depicted in television and a few films. And so Melvar wants to decide whether he's going to stick with worshiping at the altar of TOS or if he's going to shift all his devotion to the Planet Express crew. And the way he will decide how to do that is by making them all Star Trek fight each other.
This will be your standard battle to the death.
I'm really glad this episode didn't turn the conflict into the TOS crew seeing the Futurama characters as pretenders to the throne
right.
or anything like that. It's very much a Melvar instigated conflict and not a you're not better than us conflict. And I think that really helps the story.
It does. Yeah.
And it makes the TOS crew likable at 100% throughout the episode.
that's the tricky thing about writing something like this is, I guess Jimmy Doohan is the only one that really like gets completely roasted.
Right. Like his, like Welshy isn't just shot and killed. His body is then desecrated
a second time
by Melvar again.
Yeah. The fight breaks out and it's like Shatner is preparing himself by ripping his shirt up a la Gorn fight.
The sound of him ripping his uniform and then like, I don't know if this is just me projecting, but I could swear he was like scratching his chest and what you could hear was the unmistakable sound of like the sound of a shaved piece of skin, like whiskers.
Oh man. Their weapons are anything they can find. Bender finds a Tommy gun and unloads its entire magazine in delight.
That was fun.
Conversation between Shatner, Nichelle Nichols, and George Takei, where Shatner suggests that George Takei do some karate on the Planet Express crew, with which Takei takes great umbrage only later to do some karate.
Right.
I don't know if you write that joke exactly that way today, but I liked that. Like, I don't think George Takei like fucks around with shit he thinks is racist, you know, like he's a very like empowered voice in the Asian American community and like really brooks no bullshit.
He's in on the joke of making fun of Star Trek when he was shooting it, like at the time.
But like knowing that about him, I was like bracing myself when mm-hmm. when the premise of this was introduced. I was like, what are they going to do with this? And I thought it was great that he pays it off by doing a karate chop.
George Takei kind of has a lot to do this episode, and I think he almost has the second most amount of dialogue next to Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, you might be right. Nichelle Nichols gets to do her fan dance from Star Trek V.
Always get to call back the fan dance.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone gets their fun moment here.
Yeah.
Which is great.
I loved Leela fighting Kirk. This is like Leela is the character on Futurama that does the most Star Trek fighting mm-hmm. and her fighting Kirk. Kirk even does the like two-handled chop on her, gets knocked on his ass.
This episode plays the hits.
Yeah.
But it's never... I don't know. Like, you could do an episode where you play nothing but the hits and it would be lame.
Right. Yeah, it's not all fan service.
This is not that.
It's like anytime it kind of feels like it might do some fan service, it's a switcheroo and it does it.
Right.
And it fools you. And anytime it does, you know, like anytime it's actual fan service, it's done as a joke.
The fight scene gets interrupted when Melvar gets called away to dinner by Momvar. the mother figure of Melvar. You could tell Momvar is the mom because of her...
Yeah, those like cat eye glasses and the...
What decade are those glasses from?
Yeah, I don't know. The past?
They're like the glasses that a white person would wear at like an old-timey diner trying to like really sell the aesthetic.
Right. Yeah, exactly. This is another bit of a dunk on the Star Trek fan community, the idea that the devoted fan that is Melvar is a 38-year-old being of pure energy that lives in his mom's basement.
If I were a being of pure energy, I would never leave the basement.
I'm turning 38 this year. I should ask my parents if their basement is available for me to move into.
Yeah. You want that as a backup plan, I think.
That's nice cool air down there.
Yeah. The whole year through.
Yeah.
So with Melvar gone, they decide to work together to escape, both the TOS crew and the Planet Express crew. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about this plan is that their broken ships are compatibly broken.
Right. The ship that the crew took has propulsion but no life support. The Planet Express ship has life support but no propulsion. So they weld the nacelles from the original series cruise ship onto the Planet Express ship, and they're like taking off from the planet, and Melvar pursues them from a like bird of prey looking ship.
Compatibly broken, Ben, just like you and me.
Mm. We should have called this podcast that.
Yeah.
They all get pulled over by the Nimbus, Zap Brannigan's ship, and he boards them, and we cut back to the courtroom on the Planet Express ship, where they're like, and we're still in a space fight with Melvar. So right. This has all been taking place during this dogfight. And so they run up to the bridge and they have to fend off Melvar.
I really love how this story does the classic thing of beginning in a place and then telling itself in flashback. But the moment where the flashbacks meet up with the present is so nicely done.
Yeah, it's very funny. Melvar does not want to let them leave. He, these are his toys. And they get on the FaceTime with him, and Fry kind of makes the pitch that it's okay to let some things go. You know, Walter Koenig even had a little acting career after Star Trek, so it can be done.
Yeah.
I don't know. I found this a little bit hard to believe, because something you and I talk about a lot is when The Greatest Generation and The Greatest Discovery are over, there's nowhere for us to go right. at that point.
Yeah, the only place left to go is back to the beginning.
Yeah.
And just do it all over again until we're dead. Sounds like a pretty good life.
Yeah, I guess so.
So Melvar is convinced and the crew is permitted to leave.
Yeah. We skipped over the part where they couldn't take off because they were too heavy, so they had to throw the bodies of the original series crew out the side of the ship. So they're back to being heads and tanks, kind of saying, you know, Melvar wasn't all bad. He gave us bodies and he set us up and let us have eternal youth, and all that was really nice.
Yeah, but that's not what's really important. That's not the lesson here.
Yeah. What's the lesson, Adam?
It's fun to enjoy things, but when you allow the things you enjoy to run your life, you sacrifice many of the things that make a life worth living.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get to a failure to launch situation, like the Matt McConaughey movie.
I occasionally, in looking around the internet for stuff for our show, will encounter a YouTube channel or a Twitter account that is dedicated to new Star Trek things sucking. And I'll be like, it's fucking 2021. Are you still posting about this? Just don't watch it. What the fuck? And I kind of think that that's partly what's being addressed here is you know, it's fine to like something. And if you don't like something, you don't have to do it. But it's also if you like it so much that anything slightly related to it that isn't it is not a threat to you.
I think for a long time, our society has elevated those with strong personalities into popularity.
Right.
And for many people, the absence of a strong personality is replaced with a strong interest
right.
in a thing, or a strong opinion about a thing that is expressed just as vocally as these personalities that are put up on these pedestals.
Right.
And I think maybe that is that's related to what's at play in some of these people and accounts that you're describing. You know,
right.
like you don't have to be the loudest opinion in the room. You don't have to be the one with the loudest interest in the room to be an interesting person. But there is this emphasis on the need to have that kind of volume to your life or your character in order to matter. And that's just not true.
It's not. I think it's kind of a grift. They start to get rewarded by the algorithm, the algorithm that kind of looks to take you into a more and more extreme direction of whatever information you look for in your initial search. And then when they start to be financially rewarded for screaming about something being bad, I don't want to excuse these people, but it there's something tragic about it, you know, that they're in this kind of hamster wheel of hatred.
I mean, we started keeping score. That's the problem. I mean, when you can easily see how many friends you have or how many followers you have, it became about getting more of those and more of that. And there's no putting that shitty toothpaste back in the toothpaste tube, you know?
Yeah. And why did we buy a tube of shitty toothpaste to begin with? That's a terrible way to clean your teeth.
I know. This episode just got heavy duty. Did you like it, Ben?
I did. I really liked it. I don't think I got to this episode in either of my attempted rewatches of Futurama. So this one, I hadn't... If I saw it when it originally aired, which is not unlikely, it has been a long time since I've seen it, and it felt like my maiden voyage with it, and I really enjoyed watching it. How about you?
I think I watched the entire season several times, but the last time I did that was many years ago, like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So the specifics of this episode were long forgotten. It felt today like watching this episode for the first time, and it really got me several times. Like the fun alone in a room laughs that you know score because they're great jokes. They're great bits. That's the hardest laugh to get. And it worked almost every time. It's a great show and a great episode of a great show. And I don't think you have to be a Star Trek fan to enjoy this episode or the series itself. Like, it's funny incidentally set in a science fiction universe. It's not funny because that's where it lives.
Right. How do you think this compares to Lower Decks? Like, it's a very different type of show.
Mm-hmm.
But I laughed at every episode of Lower Decks for sure. But this, I laughed 8 times at this episode out loud. And I was like, I feel like I laughed a lot out loud at this one.
That's really interesting. Like I hadn't thought to A/B them, but I think I love Lower Decks and Lower Decks is hilarious, but it feels like the math is different.
Yeah.
The comedy beats of Futurama are just different in a classic way. And the comedy of Lower Decks is funny in that Rick and Morty way. Like they're both speaking comedy language, but they have different accents, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I also feel like this is a special episode of Futurama, like one that they probably knew would get new eyes on it. So they put like extra care into how banging the jokes were.
Much in the same way our many supporters approach the Max Fun Drive. We're finally in the second week. I think many of them are coming around to the idea that the show is deserving of support. So many great episodes in our catalog. So many great episodes to come.
And so we would normally do a priority one message here, but if this is during the drive, you will now hear about some great gifts. And if it's not during the drive that you're listening to this episode, I'd say get a priority one message or go ahead and support at MaximumFun.org/join.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! I think it's got to be Welshy. I think Welshy's got to be the Larkin in this episode for me.
Damn.
Like, Welshy comes out like he owns the place, gets killed again. Just a punchline character that, I mean, like if I was cast in this episode, I would love to be cast as the voice of Welshy.
Yeah. Well, the Welshy character is the most absurd character in the episode. And that's what makes Welshy a great Larkin. I'm going to go 3 ways with my Larkin, Ben.
Wow.
And the reason is Jimmy Doohan. Like I thought a lot about, like I accept and understand his unwillingness to participate in the episode. And it's that understanding that made me wonder why Walter Koenig, George Takei, and Nichelle Nichols would want to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the 3 of them are my Shimoda this episode. Like, nice. You got a career in Star Trek, probably expecting a kind of treatment in this episode that I think would have to make you question whether or not you want to participate. Like, you know Bill Shatner and Leonard Nimoy are going to be a part of it. You know they're probably going to be the stars of the episode again. What does that leave you in a 20-minute episode? Probably not much. Why Why take this job? Like, why do it?
I'm guessing they don't have the script when they're getting approached for this, too.
And everyone's seen in this episode, every one of Walter Koenig's scenes and George Takei's scenes and Nichelle Nichols' scenes are funny and well-written, and they clearly brought their best effort to it.
Yeah.
And all of their scenes had something to say about them and the character and their relationship to the show that they made.
Yeah, making fun of the things that were like badly done about their characters.
I just think about how they didn't have to do this, and they still did, and it worked out great because they chose that. And I mean, that's big fun. They chose the possibility of fun. And that's Edward Larkin right there. Like they took a shot and they won the fun.
They won the fun. I love it.
Ben, it's been 2 weeks in a row of great Greatest Discovery episodes. And I got to wonder what's going to happen next to the Greatest Discovery. We're going back to every other week. Yeah, we got to do that. This is not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. So there'll be an episode next week. And then after that, a break again.
What has a listener told us to do?
A listener has not told us to do this. In fact, people have been begging us not to do this, Adam. But a lot of new Star Trek news has come out over the last few weeks. And I mean, like, we haven't really covered enough of it on the show to earn our keep as a new Star Trek podcast. So I think we got to go over this stuff. And so I think next week's episode will be a Greatest Discovery where we look at trailers, read the news, talk about, you know, new Star Trek Picard, new Star Trek Discovery, new Strange New Worlds, all of the new stuff that's happening in the world of new Star Trek. And I'm really excited about it. Hey, we had talked about maybe doing that as also a live Twitch stream. Do you want to lay that episode down and also live stream it, Adam?
You're just springing this on me? Like this?
It's just an idea. You can say no, and then Rob's can edit this out.
No, that's a great idea. Let's do it that way. Then it's like it's getting value for the Twitch.
Yeah, value for the Twitch. So if you'd like to, watch that get recorded, you can follow the Greatest Trek channel on Twitch.tv, and if you'd like to just wait for it, it'll be in your feed next week.
If you'd like a close-up angle of Rob's fingers around a empty sausage casing and then Star Trek news just being rocketed inside and then twisted into links, that's what that episode's going to be like. You're going to love it. You're going to love watching it get made.
I hugely look forward to it, Adam, and that'll be next week. On The Greatest Discovery, and now we'll let Robs tell you one last time why you should support The Greatest Discovery in the Max Fun Drive of 2021.
Thanks, Robs, and thanks to everyone for supporting.
Here we are, the final Uxbridge Shimoda episode of Max Fun Drive 2021. Thanks so much for listening all the way to the end. Thanks so much for pledging your support. And if you haven't, I really hope I can convince you right now, because it means a whole lot to all of us. It's how we plan really fun things like tours when those happen, or live stream events, fun bonus episodes, and really just staying afloat. I'm a professional editor. Bill is a professional at social media. We have costs for keeping the podcast hosted, all sorts of things that really add up when you start putting it down on paper, and the podcast is worth it. Let's be frank, if you're listening this far in and you haven't pledged your support, I understand if there are reasons you can't do it, but you like listening to this show, and if you can, you should. Because you know what? What's good for podcasts is what's good for podcasts, and what's good for people is what's good for people, and what's best for us is you heading to MaximumFun.org/join, pledging your support, and checking the boxes for both The Greatest Discovery and The Greatest Generation. Because The Greatest Discovery is a MaximumFun.org podcast. It's hosted by Adam Pranica and Benjamin R. Harrison. It's produced by me, Rob Schulte. Bill Tilly does all of our social media work. He also makes some amazing trading cards, and that's why we call him the Card Daddy. Our theme music and interstitials are by the great Adam Ragusea. You can check out his YouTube channel. So once again, thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting. If you still haven't clicked the link, please go to the show notes and click it now. $5 a month. What is that? 17 cents a day? MaximumFun.org/join.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.